This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave, filling in for Terry Gross. If you think it's hard to decide which long-distance phone company to use, just wait to see what happens if Congress finalizes its telecommunications reform package. Last week, the Senate approved the first major overhaul of telecommunications law since the 1930s. The bill would deregulate the local and long-distance telephone industry, cable television, broadcasting, electric utilities, and wireless communications. It does away with most limits on cable TV rates and raises the number of radio and television stations an individual or an organization can own. The House is expected to vote on a similar measure later this summer. My guest, Ken Aletta, is the communications columnist for The New Yorker magazine and the author of Three Blind Mice, a book about the major television networks. He says it's hard to predict where all of this deregulation would lead.
Not clear. Once again, we're jumping off a bridge. We don't know whether there's water underneath or how tall the bridge is. I mean, you could make, there are two models for the future. One model is that the big guys, the Time Warners and the Rupert Murdochs and the ABC Cap Cities and the Telecommunications Inc. and the AT&Ts and the Seven Baby Bells, that those big giants will become bigger and will be able to buy up other operations all across America and become these giants. That's one model. The other model is that by allowing these industries, in effect, to compete against one another, the model is you're going to have more competition rather than less competition, and that competition will serve the public. We don't yet know which model will prove true. You can make the argument that if the first model proves true, the greater concentration of power in the hands of fewer and fewer media giants, that the antitrust laws could be put into effect to curb that.
But
in order to do that, you need a government big enough to bring an antitrust suit.
Exactly. The Justice Department can't always handle all the caseloads, and their antitrust laws and their enforcement don't seem quite adequate in this case to protect the consumer.
But the argument that those who favor deregulation are making, they'll, for instance, point to the computer industry and say, look at what happened to IBM as the model here. That IBM, Big Blue, was once the giant megalop, you know, this giant company, all-powerful. And today it's not. You have many new computer companies that are in business, and the prices of computerization has gone down dramatically, even as service and computer power has increased. So that's one model. The other model is the breakup of AT&T. They argue that if you look at what happened there, we've had a burst of new competition. In part, that's true, the new competition with AT&T and that the Baby Bells have gotten in that business, but the Baby Bells are essentially a monopoly. That monopoly, the argument goes, will be challenged now by cable companies that will get in the telephone business, by the wireless companies that are in the telephone business, so that you will have a model of competition. We don't know which model will prove to be the case, but there are dangers, obviously.
Well, one thing that seems to be clear is that the bill lifts regulation of cable rates, and that cable rates, at least in the short term, will go up. Is that how this greater freedom is going to bear on the consumer?
I think you have to look at long term, short term, and the answers may be different. In the short run, the odds are that cable prices will go up in the very short run. I mean, the cable companies feel they have not been able to charge a rate increase, and have not been able to invest comparable to the investments being made by the telephone companies that are trying to get into their business. So there's going to probably be some rate increases in terms of cable. But in the intermediate run, that is to say, not the next year or two, but the next 5 years or so, and beyond that, the odds are that what happened to the computer industry, if competition is the same in, say, the cable industry, that prices will go down.
You know, my fear is, as I'm listening to you, my fear is that with if this deregulation reform passes and becomes law, that I'm going to have to make decisions based on all this technology that I don't understand, that I'm going to have to figure out what would be the best way to go, whether to get my TV from cable or to go with the telephone company or to... Right now, I can barely decide about long-distance carriage. What do you think will be the fallout then for the consumer?
I think the consumer, this is a profound change in our lives that we're embarking on here in terms of the way consumer technology will impact on consumers. It may well be that in 10 years, your TV set will be your computer screen. And you'll interact with it through your keyboard, or maybe it'll be your telephone model, or maybe your wireless instrument will be what they call a personal digital assistant that you carry around that is a combination of portable phone, and you're talking about something that fits in the palm of your hand. That's a combination of portable phone and fax machine, and word processing system and TV screen all in one, using again the wireless technologies. But there will be big changes, but we have to make choices today on a more mundane level on what credit card company. You know, we get all these mailings, you know, what the interest rate will be if you switch credit cards. As you mentioned, you get it with your long-distance services. It's that we're going to be hit increasingly with these choices, and we're going to have to become more sophisticated, or if we choose not to be sophisticated, and some would say we would choose to be Luddites if we so make that choice, we'll turn to our kids. And our 9-year-olds are going to know, and they're going to say, hey, Dad or Mom, you know, get with it. You should be looking at a Compaq or a Hewlett Packard or whatever. And you know, maybe they'll say, you know, why are you buying a VCR that's separate from your personal digital assistant, that's separate from your television set, that's separate from your phone system, that's separate from your CD player? You can put it all in one instrument. And there's a new one out now at the Wiz. You should go down and look at it. I'll come with you, Mom or Dad.
So that's the advantage to me, that my phone company is going to get into cable, and that the cable company will have its hand in the phone service, that eventually I'll be able to have one thing in my house that will do all that?
Well, that's a potential advantage, but that's not the main advantage. The main advantages for the consumers would be, one, that your prices might come down, and might come down dramatically. That's a possibility. I mean, they have come down dramatically in, say, long-distance service, and they have come down dramatically in regard to computer costs. I mean, you look at what it cost. When I first bought a Hewlett Packard printer, it was probably $2,000 for that printer. That same printer today is about $300, and it's a better printer. And so that's, you know, you do benefit from competition. And also, as the market expands, mass production allows you to shrink the cost and therefore the price you charge a consumer. But one advantage for a consumer potentially is dramatically lower prices. Another advantage for consumers is the much heralded notion of viewing on demand. Instead of you waiting for a scheduled NPR at a certain hour of a certain day, or waiting for Murphy Brown at 9:30 on Monday night on CBS, or 60 Minutes at 7 on Sunday at CBS, you could choose to watch what you want to watch when you want to watch it, so that your schedule, you dominate the schedule, a network doesn't for you. And that's a great potential advantage for the consumer. Now, there's also a disadvantage, which they tend not to advertise, which is that every time you watch outside of what's free broadcasting, as say the networks is free broadcasting, but the assumption that many of these business people are making is that we will enter a pay-per-view world. That is to say, you want to watch a tape, basically what you could do on your VCR, but you forgot to tape it, so you call up a service and you say, hey, I want to watch Superman tomorrow night. I missed it Sunday night on ABC. They say, great, $2.99 or $1.99. And maybe then if you have advertisers sponsoring the show and you're willing to allow advertising, maybe it'll be 99 cents. But essentially, they're going to charge you for watching things in this 500 or channel or more universe that they're speaking of. It's a pay-per-view world. You can get movies on demand, but you're going to have to pay for them.
Ken Auletta is my guest. He's the communications columnist for The New Yorker magazine. Let's take a short break now, and we'll be back to talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Back with Ken Auletta. The bill also allows electric utility holding companies to provide some telecommunication services. So while we're talking about all this new technology, let's talk a little bit about smart houses. I could probably, if this passes, rig my house so that I'd use less electricity at peak hours, and I could automatically turn off my appliances when I'm out or busy. That sounds pretty good. And for decades, I think futurists have been predicting that we'll all live in smart houses like this. So do you think our houses will finally be smart?
Well, I think potentially they can be. And, you know, one of the great questions about the future is, what is the intelligent agent that will be the interface or between us as a consumer and the instruments in our home? What will make it user-friendly? For instance, they perfected the remote control switch so that it is user-friendly. Everyone, no one complains they can't use a remote control switch. It's very simple. And it's had a profound effect upon viewing and on attention spans of people. I mean, I think you can make an argument when you talk to teachers that one of the great evils in the society in terms of their ability to get the attention and retain the attention of children is that remote control device. And kids are so used to switching off things that bore them. And that happens often in classrooms today. But essentially, if you could find a replication of that remote control device so that it's user-friendly, and it may not just be a device, it may be voice-activated. It may be that you're going to walk in to open up your refrigerator and start talking to some chip that's going to record your what you say, and you say, need a gallon of 1% milk, a dozen large eggs, you know, a small filet mignon, a boneless breast of chicken, and then you press a button and you get your order sent to the supermarket. And they know it's you because your chip portrays your address and your account number. And an hour later, it's delivered to your home.
It's the Jetsons. I'm curious, though, and this is a question that you raise in your series in The New Yorker, just how much interaction Americans really want, whether there is a market for all of these fancy interactive services.
Don't know. It's unknowable. The truth of the matter is we are jumping off a bridge here, not just in terms of telecommunications legislation, but in terms of what the assumptions are. The assumption that many people make who speak of this brave new world of 500-plus channels, or really one channel where you can get anything you want anytime you want it, or the convergence of your computer and your telephone and your TV and your VCR, the assumption is that the public doesn't want to just sit and be passively entertained, that they want to work a little bit, and they want interactivity. They want to scroll through the 500 channel choices, and they want to select for themselves, be empowered to make their own decisions, and talk on the internet, and open up communications with people all over the world. That's the assumption that is commonly accepted today. That may not be true. I mean, it may well be that at the end of a day, most people, I'm not saying some people, I'm saying most people may just want to collapse in front of the TV set and let someone else do the work for them.
The House will probably consider the bill in July. What do you think the law will eventually encompass? If I can ask you to look in your crystal ball, what do you think will survive? What will get the axe?
Well, I think they will raise the limits that broadcast networks will be allowed, and television group owners will be allowed to own more TV stations than they're now currently allowed. They're now allowed to own 12 TV stations reaching no more than 25% of the American populace. That will increase to probably 35% of the American populace. The limits on how many radio stations you may own will also be increased. The telephone companies will be free to get into the cable business. The cable companies will be free to get into the telephone business. The power companies will be free to get into anyone's business, as will the wireless companies. So you will have a situation where potentially you will have more than one wire or wireless means into your home, and there will be competition. That, I think, will probably pass this year. What effect it will have on the on the public, whether it will actually in the long run or intermediate run lead to lower prices. You can only, it's an act of faith, not an act of fact.
One of the concerns people have about a more interactive world is that these corporations, not only will we have a lot more choice in what we will view or what kind of information will come into our house, but a lot of information about us is going to go out to them. And there are many people very concerned about privacy issues in this.
I think privacy is a profound issue. What they're doing, the assumption that many of these companies make, and, you know, technology allows you to have that box on top of your TV set, for instance, is becoming a very powerful microprocessor, basically a computer, a camera in your home that records everything, what shows you watch. And if you do your banking through that, it will record where you spend your money. If your credit cards come through that, include all your bills. So essentially, as we move more towards this interactive future of using this device to do many things, including shop with, right? Someone will be collecting a lot of information about us. What happens to that? Again, you get back to what is government's role? I mean, I want government, and I think many Americans do when they think about it. And part of the job is to ventilate these issues so they can think about it more than perhaps they've thought about the telecommunications legislation that's before the Congress. You want the government to protect your privacy. For instance, if you go into a Blockbuster store, which is now one out of five video stores in America is a Blockbuster, they have enormous amount. They have the most extensive consumer research about every one of their customers. They know what movies we've rented, what our likes, what actors or actresses we tend to be partial towards. They know some credit information about us. Are they allowed to sell that information? To who? With my permission or without? You've got some big questions here. One of the great advantages that a company has who has control of that box, let's say the cable company, is they have access to all of their customers' preferences. Any advertiser would die to have access to who. Let's say that, for instance, I'm Budweiser, right? Wouldn't I like to know who the beer drinkers are? So that I could target my advertising and not waste a lot of money on ads to everyone, just target it at people who we know are beer drinkers. Great advantage. Do I want the cable company to sell that information so I'm bombarded by the equivalent of junk mail? Boy, I don't know. But then they're going to come at you. You know how they're going to try and induce you as a customer? They're going to say, all right, if you give us access, if you allow us to sell information about you to advertisers, we'll cut in half your telephone or probably your television bill, because advertising will pay for the shows you watch. So instead of spending $3 for a movie, you'll only have to spend $1.50. And then you confront people with the tough choice. Give up my privacy for saving some money.
So who's going to protect us? I mean, Ralph Nader doesn't have $40 million to sink into lobbying efforts for the next telecommunications reform.
The analogy of playing a football game without a referee is the one that stays in my mind. That is to say, you would no more consider putting two gladiator teams on a field to try and bust each other's backs and tackle and grab without a referee to call the play dead, to call a foul, to stop action, to call an offside. You would never consider playing a game without a referee. Well, you can't play this game where you have nine industries basically each trying to kill each other without a government referee. The problem is that you want to have it so that the government referee doesn't play the game themselves. You want them on the sidelines, but you want them to have the whistle in their mouth.
So do you see the House putting some of these revisions into the bill, or do you see this issue rising again in the public I and then in Congress in five years from now, or 2 years from now, or 20 years from now?
The issue will rise again, because what happens is that what often happens when you have dramatic reform legislation, as this is, inevitably the realization will sink in. Did some good things, but we went too far. We have to make some mid-course corrections. And one of the mid-course corrections that will be made, I think it's fairly safe to say, is to say, hey, we need some more. We need to beef up the government referee. Maybe it's the government referee in regard to the privacy. Maybe it's the government referee in terms of prosecuting, you know, monopolies or just enforcing the antitrust laws that are already on the books that are not affected by this legislation, but they are affected by the legislation. If the Justice Department isn't beefed up, or in fact, if you scale back the enforcement division of both Justice and, say, the FCC, then there's some real question whether you can do the kind of investigation that allows you to determine whether there is a monopoly or there is restraint of trade. So I think it's probably safe to say there will be some mid-course corrections after the legislation is passed, if it is passed. And there's probably a lot of, in the heat of the moment and the euphoria of the moment about, you know, the new totem, which is deregulation, which makes a lot of sense. And I don't sneer at that notion of deregulation. But nevertheless, what's often forgotten is that to do these things, to ensure fairness, there will be a need for a referee, and that maybe this legislation goes too far in crippling the government referee, and maybe goes too far in avoiding the traditional notion, which is an important notion, of what is the public trust.
Ken Auletta, I want to thank you very much for talking on Fresh Air today.
Thank you.
Ken Auletta is the communications columnist for The New Yorker magazine. This is Fresh Air.